Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 803. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about a chicken strip, a playa and dunes, ghost towns, record-breaking heat, and 20 mule teams as we go to Death Valley National Park in California. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Death Valley. I'd like to welcome back to the show Jeff Ulfs, who's come to talk to us this time about Death Valley. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me back. I always use these podcasts to help plan my own trips, and I'm glad that I can give back and put another pin on your world map.
Well, and Jeff was recently in Death Valley and pitched me that we didn't have a show on that, and honestly, I had trouble believing that because it is a major U.S. national park. It is the largest in the 48 states, but I have only been there one time, so I knew that I wasn't going to do an episode on it. Jeff, you have been there, is it fair to say, more than once?
Yeah. At least since 1996, I tried to get there at least once a year. As people may remember, I retired from the Park Service, so a friend of mine was the superintendent at Death Valley. We used to go up there every President's Day weekend and stay with her, and then Joshua Tree and Death Valley are in the same. We share a lot of resources, so I've been up there for some assignments and things like that. So, and I was just up for a month ago, so I was like, "Hey, Death Valley!"
Excellent. Well, why should someone go to Death Valley?
Well, it is so full of history and nature, at least geology speaking. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. Mainly mining history. So it's really going to be mining and geology are the two biggest things. Mm-hmm. And I've pretty much have toured all around it except for about five places are still on my bucket list to go see. And as we talk here, as you said, it's the largest in the lower 40. It's the fifth largest in the country. The four more are up in Alaska. Mm-hmm. It's over 3 million acres. It's just a little bit less than the size of Connecticut. And it's about 140 miles north to south long.
Okay.
We're not going to get to cover everything, but I'll try to get the main highlights. Come on, let's put it on a map. It's about 140 miles west of Las Vegas and 310 mm-hmm. miles north of Los Angeles on the east side of the Sierras. So a lot of people going to Yosemite and Sequoia, if they come around, usually try to hit Death Valley too. So it's really close to Las Vegas. I don't suggest doing it as a day trip per se, but the best part of it, you could probably 5 days, but I've been doing it every year and I'm still spending a couple days here. There's mainly paved roads and then there's the backcountry, which I'm going to split off as we talk about here.
I have done it as a day trip from Vegas, or at least on the way home from Vegas.
Okay.
And as a palate cleanser for Vegas, a nice alternative for what Vegas is. But that kind of brings up the question. One of the questions that we usually ask, but we don't ask it first, but I think it's worth asking with Death Valley, is what time of year should I go?
Well, I would usually say that winter is going to be ideal, mm-hmm. just because of the temperatures that you're dealing with. I would certainly avoid the summer. Although it's done.
Although I know with like German tourists, that is the favorite time of the year to go, because the ability to experience something that hot. And we're talking hot.
If you've got air conditioning in your rig, I guess it's fine. I was there actually on April Fool's Day and did a 3-mile mm-hmm. round trip hike across the valley there. Mm-hmm. Got back about 10 or 10:30, and it was in its 90s. And I was like, not mentally really prepared for that. I mean, I was prepared for it, but it was like, wow, this is, I mean, I need to come back in January. So they get barely 2 inches of rain there a year. Hmm. And they pride themselves in saying at one time that they had like 351 clear days a year. So, you know, you're not going to have too many cloudy days. Hmm. But speaking about that, of course, it's the hottest place on Earth. There at Furnace Creek, which we'll talk about, they recorded 134 in July of 1913, and they kind of stick with that, even though they're not really 100% sure that the equipment was totally accurate. Mm-hmm. But then just last June of last year, in 2021, it was 130.
Whether you're the hottest or the third hottest or whatever, yeah, it's hot in the summertime, yeah, in the valley.
Well, they say that the rocks get sunburned there at Death Valley. Yeah, so, and of course, Death Valley is really about the geology, the faulting and the effects of the erosion on an area. But the United Nations declared a man in biosphere, the Mojave and Colorado Desert Biosphere Reserve in 1975. It was one of four sites that made that specific title. Okay. Joshua Tree being one, Anza Borrego Desert being another, and I think the Santa Rosa Mountains was the fourth.
Okay.
But it was set aside by President Hoover in 1933 as a national monument, and then redesignated a national park the same time Joshua Tree was in 1994. There's a lot of people that come there just to experience that. And as we go along here, there'll be several things I know people are going to be going, yeah, that's the reason why I want to go.
Okay. Where are we going to start?
Well, I want to just let people know there is an entrance fee for Death Valley. It's not your typical national park. There's no entrance station. What you'll find as you come in any one of the roads is a pay meter on the side. We used to call them Iron Rangers back in the day, but now they're all digitized, I think. Or you can go down to the visitor center and pay your entrance fee at the visitor center. And if you did buy your ticket at one of the outlying pay stations, or you come in with an annual pass, they're going to give you a card that placed on your dashboard that tells the date of when your pass expires.
Okay.
That's easier for the rangers, because the rangers will, if they don't see that on the windshield, they will stop you and see if you paid your entrance fee. But if we're going to talk about Death Valley, of course, as with any place in the country, you need to start with the Native Americans. They have actually been in Death Valley for thousands of years. At Furnace Creek is the homeland for the Timbisha Shoshone Indian tribe.
Okay.
And they have their homeland there, which is not technically part of the park, but it's right there in the village of Furnace Creek. Then along came something that gave Death Valley its name, and that was the 49ers. They were looking for a shortcut to the gold fields in California without being on the old Spanish trail, which is down to the south, or the trail to the north. So they decided to cut across. They got lost for 26 days. One person passed away as a result of it. And the story goes that as they were finally climbing out of Death Valley, someone looked back and said, "Goodbye, Death Valley." And that is the legend of how Death Valley got its name.
Hmm. Okay.
Strangely enough, in 1998, somebody found a trunk of items. They thought it was a trunk from the 49ers, and that was the way it was kind of packaged, for lack of a better word. And it was like, oh my gosh, we found this artifact and all the artifacts, and it was probably left off by one of the 49ers. Well, it turned out to be a fraud. But it got national attention when that was going through. So,
are you debunking the trunk?
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, that's just some of the general background, a bit on Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
If you, I know it's strange. If you look at Death Valley, it looks like a stick man as far as the roads are concerned.
Right.
So there are two roads, one left leg, one the right leg. Then you got the main body going all the way due north, and a little ways up, you've got a state highway going east and west that are kind of like its arms. So we're going to come in starting at the south. One of the places that people may have heard of but don't normally recognize with it is Devil's Hole. And it's part of the park, technically, but it's not attached to it. It's over in Nevada. And it's where the Devil's Hole pupfish are. They are probably one of the world's rarest fishes. I think there's less than 200 remaining. And just this year, their 50th year of counting the fish, they had the highest count of fish they've ever counted in 22 years. So I'm hoping that's a good thing. But as far as pupfish, which have basically been around since the Ice Age, there are five species in the park. And the Devil's Hole, basically you're coming up to a cage looking down into basically an underground pool there that you can see. And that's as close as you're going to get because of obviously the sensitivity of the fish. Now, there is another place I'll mention where you might be able to see them in one of the creeks, so we'll talk about that. But they say that the water there in that hole is like 3 times saltier than the ocean. So that's a good survival story. Leaving there, I would say one of the ways you can come in, although it's the longer way, is to go down to the town of Shoshone and come in on State Highway 178 there. And it's a bit of a longer drive, not a lot other than getting the first glimpse of Death Valley as you're coming over. There is an old gold mill there called Ashford Mills, which was created about 1914, which was one of your first stops. But then the next thing that you come along to, which is probably one of the more popular places why people go to Death Valley, is Badwater. Badwater is the lowest place in North America, 282 feet below sea level, and was part of the old ancient Lake Manly. And there are signs there saying you're below sea level and things like that, and you can get out and walk on a little boardwalk. And it's kind of cool to be out there. And you're almost in the view, well, the highest peak in Death Valley is right across the valley at Telescope Peak at 11,049 feet. But when you think about it, the highest peak in the lower 48, Mount Whitney, is just a short distance away.
Right.
Once you get over that hill, there it is. And with that, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Badwater 135 Ultra Marathon.
No, but I'm pretty sure I'm not entering.
Yeah. It's supposed to be the toughest foot race in the world.
Okay.
It takes place every July. And it's a 135-mile course from Badwater to the base of Mount Whitney. And this is the 45th year of them doing that. And we're talking July here. So I don't want to say how courageous are these people.
Well, and you mentioned Badwater. We didn't say that it's a basin and a salt flat.
Most of that is going to be a salt playa out there at the bottom. And one of the features that we'll stop at as we continue north is very specific to that. As you're heading up the road, the next feature is going to be a natural bridge, which you can stop and hike up to. And then you get to that other feature, the Devil's Golf Course. This is where you're talking about the salt pan with these little salt heaps, giving it the name. A lot of stuff is called devils in Death Valley. And so this is kind of a funny take on a golf course. If you were playing with the devil, you've got to get around all these little salt heaps on that. But probably one of the next nicest little places, just continuing on north towards Furnace Creek, is Artist's Palette on Artist's Drive. This is a one-way 9-mile road. It twists through the sedimentary rocks that are on the east side of Death Valley there. But you get into this one little part, and I've heard it called the volcanic rock canvas. And it's just the multitude of colors in that particular area that gets its name for as the Artist's Palette.
Well, and you say the multitude of colors. I can't think of any other place in the U.S. that has this broad a spectrum of colors. I get reds, I get blues, I get yellows, certainly some grays and greens and things like that. I think there are other places in the world I know that have these sort of painted hills, but I'm drawing a blank trying to come up with any other place in the U.S.
I would concur. I've seen a lot of places with a multitude of colors, but yeah, I think you're right. The spectrum on that one, it's impressive. It's a definite must to take that road around. Once you get back on to the main road heading towards Furnace Creek, there's just kind of really one more stop if you want to have time to deal with the geology on that area there, and it's called Golden Canyon, and there's a little 1.5-mile nature trail there. Somebody mentioned it as a geologic classroom. Take that trail and you'll have your geologic studies all prepared for you on the earthquakes and the volcanoes that help create Death Valley. And it's got its name because the rocks there have a golden color.
And I'm wondering if this is the one that I took that's a little bit of a slot canyon off to the east. Is that the right one?
That could be. There's also another one I didn't mention called Desolation Canyon.
I think that's the one.
That might be the one you get too. And I wasn't really going to mention that one, but there is that one if you want to have time. So once you get done there, you'll take the road and it comes right into Furnace Creek. Furnace Creek is an oasis, lots of planted date palms there. It's the headquarters of the park, the main visitor center. People can get their junior ranger programs there. There's a borax museum. Borax is basically a sodium product. Many people will know about the 20 Mule Team Borax
I think many people our age know about 20 Mule Team Borax, but for our younger listeners, what the heck are you talking about, Jeff?
Well, in the 1880s, when they were mining the borax, and it would go, they had many other terminuses for their wagon trains, which were basically these huge wagons pulled by 20 mules on the front. And they would go about 165 miles. I know one of the terminuses is down in Mojave, California. And there's actually a plaque there saying it's a terminus. And it takes them 10 days to do that back in the 1800s. And they're hauling this borax that they mined down there. And the borax is being used for laundry, soap, and making glass. And it made several individuals pretty rich.
Well, and when I was a kid, 20 Mule Team Borax as a product was still sold. It may be sold today, but I haven't seen it in decades. In fact, it looks like it actually is still sold. But they were also the sponsor of some of the old Westerns on TV. And so we saw commercials for 20 Mule Team Borax before we even knew where Death Valley was or what borax was.
Well, even more than that, there was a radio program, Old West Radio Stories, called Death Valley Days.
Oh, sure, right.
Come on, Chris. You know who was one of the people on
Ronald
that, right?
Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, right. Yeah, that was sponsored by Borax. It ran for 18 seasons from 1952 to 1970.
Before he was president, we should point out.
Well, correct. And there is, just north of the visitor center, is the old Harmony Borax Works, and you can pull up there and see one of the old 20 Mule Team wagons, and just it's a little pull off the road, and it was where the works used to be. Now, here's an item most people aren't aware of. The CCC were in Death Valley.
Civilian Conservation Corps.
Civilian Conservation Corps back in the 30s. And their barracks were left behind, and they were used as a Japanese internment camp for Manzanar. There was a riot at Manzanar, and part of the group was moved over to Death Valley from 1942 to 1944. And if you know where to look, those internment barracks are still in the park.
I did not know that. And for those people who don't know, we've got a couple terms there. So the Civilian Conservation Corps was one of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal programs that especially took young men who couldn't find a job and gave them something to eat and a place to stay, and then put them on projects that were typically outdoor projects. And so quite a lot of Civilian Conservation Corps projects were in national parks.
And state parks.
And state parks. True. Yeah. Also true.
Well, that kind of gives you an overview. Now, there's Furnace Creek Inn. I was going to mention the lodging towards the end. So if we go back down to the eastern leg of this stick person.
Now, we should point out, too, that you have not gone to the top of the park. You're not even halfway up the park yet.
No.
Okay.
No, we're still down the lower third, I'm guessing. Now, if you'd left Devil's Hole and decided to come in via State Highway 190 out of Death Valley Junction, you're going to enter the park, and one of the first places you're going to hit there, and this is actually the shortest way in. It's a lot quicker a drive than having done the one we just mentioned, is going to take you past to a side road that goes up to what's called Dante's View. And this is probably one of your best places to get a good view of the entire length or a good chunk of Death Valley. One of the more curious things is as you're driving up there, on your left-hand side, you may glimpse the old mining town of Ryan. Now, Ryan is not in the park, but it has been acquired by Death Valley Conservancy. And I think they periodically may give tours there, and it's certainly worth doing because there is a baby gauge railroad. That they actually used to, in a period of time, give rides on when the mining town had it open to visitors. But yeah, it was part of the gauge railroad for the mine, going into the mine and coming out of the mine. And it's actually, I got to visit it. An old co-worker was caretaking, so I got to see the place. So it's, I'm just throwing it out there. You're probably not going to get into it, but if you hear of it open, don't miss a chance to go up there and take a look at that. Coming back down and going up Dante's View is, I'm trying to think, it's about a 15-mile up and then, of course, back down to the main road. Then as you're turning back north to go towards Furnace Creek again, you're going to have another point there called Zabriskie Point, which is actually it's named after one of the Borax general managers. And it's a good place to see what they call the Badlands, these erosions along there, and it's probably one of the best places to see a sunrise in the park.
Oh, interesting. Well, and it's not a big hike. I did it on the day trip, and I think it is some spectacular scenery is the payoff for a pretty short hike. So, good stomp.
Yeah, it was real quick. Unless you're really hardy, you're not going to go hiking into the backcountry of Death Valley. Mm-hmm. So they've got a lot of little short nature hikes and trails and things like that, a couple miles long and stuff like that. But we're going to continue north from Furnace Creek. We are now going to head up towards what most people also think of as when they talk about Death Valley, and that's Scotty's Castle.
Right.
One of the first places on your way up and just outside of Furnace Creek in a little ways is called Salt Creek, and there is an interpretive trail there. And it's one of the few places where you're going to find surface water in Death Valley. Hmm. And this is where you have an opportunity to possibly see a species of desert pupfish. Now, Okay. Again, these are very small fish. I don't want to call them fingerlings, but that's kind of probably what they're about right. Now, I've been on that hike or that trail a couple times. I've never actually seen one of them, but they are one of the five species are supposed to be in there. And it's kind of neat to see this water flowing through the middle of Death Valley. Now, as we head north, we're going to come and we're going to cross the junction of the east and the west arms of this stick figure. And we're just going to continue north. And we're going to get up to Scotty's Castle. And Scotty's Castle was constructed between the 1920s and 30s as a Spanish-style villa by Death Valley Scotty. He was doing it for a rich investor named Albert Johnson. He convinced Johnson that he had a gold mine and to invest in him. And he did, and Scotty built this spectacular structure there. And Death Valley Scotty was a bit of a character, to say the least. He was a trick rider in the Buffalo Bill shows in the 1900s. He and another character down here at Joshua Tree, which we've talked about in our program, that program was Bill Keys. They actually got involved in a fake shootout, but that's another story for another time. So they were just desert characters. And Albert Johnson knew that Death Valley Scotty was not really, there was no mine, but he said that he paid him back in laughs. And I can only tell Death Valley Scotty giving stories and things like that. And Scotty is buried above the castle, on a little knoll above the castle. He never really lived there. He actually had a home down canyon called the Lower Vine Ranch. It was his home. And again, in the past, they have had some rare tours of his home. And if you ever hear of something like that being offered by the National Park Service, I would certainly, again, take that as a chance to get on one of those tours. Currently, though, Scotty's Castle is not open. And we're taping this in May of 2022. Mm-hmm. It has been closed since 2015 due to a massive flood that had come down that canyon. And the damage to the roads and the infrastructure is too great. And so they hope to have it open in December of this year, 2022, but that's the last I heard. That also used to be an exit out to Nevada, but you know, so if you're coming in, that road is completely closed. You're not going to be using that road at all to get in and out of the park. So
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, there's no way. That doesn't exist until they get it rebuilt. So the last little stop on this little northward trek is a place called Ubihibi Crater. And it's an old volcanic crater, erupted hundreds of years ago. There's a great overlook on the rim that you can walk around. And it's just another geologic feature that makes Death Valley so spectacular.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken,
pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, there are, like I said, I was going to leave to the last, what I'm going to call the backcountry, which are the four-wheel drive Jeep trails. So this is as far north as you're going to go, probably with a sedan. Okay. So let's back down to that west arm of the stick figure that I've been calling.
Question for you before you back down here. On my map, the west arm and the east arm are marked as paved roads. I don't know the condition of the road that we were on there that goes up to Scotty's Castle. Is that a gravel road or is that just a
all the way up to Yubihibi is paved.
Okay, got it.
So
thank you.
Every road we've talked about coming in on, the 178 out of Shoshone, the 190 out of Death Valley Junction is paved. And like I said, going all the way up to Yubihibi is paved. And then the east arm of the stick figure and the west arm of the stick figure are one is State Highway 190, the continuation of it. And I don't think in California the east arm has a specific name. There's actually a fork there too. But those are all paved. So everything we're talking about is paved till I get to the ones that aren't paved.
Okay.
And again, depending on how much time, of course, Scotty's Castle not being open, you'd probably have time to come back and take that west arm. And just a mile or so, you're going to hit Devil's Cornfield.
Okay.
And this is kind of unique because it looks like a cornfield. It's arrowweed that has been eroded around the base of the plant by various factors of erosion, water, and wind. And they just stick up like these corn stalks. It's cool. It's a neat thing to look at. Hmm. A lot of things nature carves are really neat to look at. You can't believe that nature does this in and of itself. And just a little bit further is the Mesquite Flat Sand Dunes. And this is one of the two major sand dunes in Death Valley. I don't think this has the height of another one we're going to talk about, but it certainly, I think, is a little bigger in area. And again, just park there and hike out to the sand dunes, and people play on the sand dunes and roll on them and things like that. So it's always a good stop for fun.
We should just say, since you're talking about sand dunes, this whole region of California is desert for miles, going down here into the Mojave and going down to where you used to be in Joshua Tree. And for people who grew up thinking that deserts mean sand dunes, they're going to be a little disappointed. There aren't sand dunes everywhere. There are some like this, but they're relatively rare in that desert area.
Yeah. I mean, there are minor sand dunes that you can find throughout, but yeah, the Mesquite Flat Sand Dunes, and we're going to talk about Eureka Sand Dunes here in a few minutes, were the two main ones. And up at Eureka, there are other sand dunes other than Eureka. And that was where I was just at on April 1st, so I'd always wanted to see that. And my impression is, and not to belittle Death Valley, but the Kelso Sand Dunes in down in Mojave National Preserve, if you really want to see a good, huge sand dunes, that's probably the bigger one out of the ones in California.
At least the ones not at the beach.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. We have beaches, but we just don't have water.
Right. That is true.
Yeah. So then you're going to come to, heading west, is Stovepipe Wells Village. And it's basically a gas station, lodging. It was an ancient water hole that they put a stovepipe down into the ground in 1926 to get water. This is a good stopping point, and we'll talk more about stopping points here a little later, because there's only a couple of them, but this would be one of those.
Well, and this is also someplace we could stay. We haven't mentioned so far, but there aren't a lot of hotels in the park.
No.
This is one.
Good time to mention them then, too. Yes, this is one of them, Stovepipe Wells. There's another one a little further to the west going on the same route called Panamint Springs. The main lodging in the park is Furnace Creek Inn, down at Furnace Creek, which is a historic one built in 1927. The company that owns Furnace Creek also has what they call the Ranch, which is more of a motel-ish looking.
Okay. This ranch I don't know about. Yeah.
They have a swimming pool, 18-hole golf course there.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not talking about the Devil's Golf Course. This is a real golf course.
Right.
And mentioning these places, Furnace Creek, Stovepipe Wells, and Panamint Springs, these are the only places in the park you're going to find gas inside the park.
Okay.
So I'll reiterate it again, but never pass up one of these without filling up. I don't care what you think your gauge is at. This is a safety measure. Leaving Stovepipe Wells, then you're going to come to another fork. There's a road that turns off to the south off of 190. It heads up to a place called Wild Rose. And Wild Rose Ranger Station has a unique distinction. Chris, I'm sure you've heard Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Yes.
Ghost Riders in the Sky was written by Stan Jones when he was a ranger station at Wild Rose Ranger Station.
Get out of here. I did not know that.
He left being a ranger. This wasn't his first assignment in the park, but he left here being a songwriter full-time for Disney, mainly. That was his main employer. And he wrote that there in 1947. There is a great book out by Michael Ward on the history of Stan Jones and Ghost Riders in the Sky. And it was written on the porch there at the ranger station.
Hmm.
At the end of this little jaunt down south past Wild Rose is what's called the charcoal kilns. This is where the road ends. These are 10 beehive stone structures that were built in 1876 that produce charcoal for the mining smelters, that were in treeless areas, which there is a lot of in Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So they would make the charcoal there and send that down to the smelters for mining. After you've done that and you back out, you continue down the 190, you head continue west towards the State Highway 395, which is the big eastern highway up the Sierras. You're going to pass the Panamint Springs, which we just talked about for food and lodging. And there is a side trip into a place called Darwin Falls. Yes, a waterfall in the desert. It was named after a prospector by the name of Darwin French. And this is actually one of the five areas I've still yet to get into. But I've had a lot of people tell me it's a great hike into the falls. They're very pretty. There is a town called Darwin on the other side of the ridge, which you'd back out and kind of come around. It's a very eclectic little community. Adventuresome. Drive down and drive around town. You might see some very unique individuals that live there who enjoy their solitude out in the desert.
And just to put this in perspective, we're talking to somebody who lives out in the desert. So
people who live in the desert have great stories.
Okay.
The last thing I'm going to mention on this 190 going towards the 395 is something, and it's outside the park. It's on BLM land. But most people, we talked about it on our Joshua Tree, but the U2 Joshua Tree album with the Joshua Tree cover on the album.
Okay.
That was just outside this western boundary on BLM land. The tree is long since gone. It's a mile hike south of the road. There is a bit of a makeshift memorial there, but that's where the tree was, folks, out in that area.
I did not know that. Well, and you say BLM, for our non-U.S. listeners, we're talking about the Bureau of Land Management. So another U.S. managed land, although managed in a different fashion than the national parks.
Yeah, they're federal public lands that have not been designated something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be mentioning that again. So if you hear it again, that's what I'll be talking about. So this next little bit I want to talk about is basically backcountry travel.
Okay.
I'll just define it as that. This is going to be your four-wheel drive roads. Most of them are doable in any normal. I have a RAV4, and I've done all but one of them in my RAV4. So you should have four-wheel drive. You should have some clearance. You should have some knowledge about driving in sand in the desert. As with anything, when you're going out in the desert, please carry plenty of supplies, carry plenty of water, carry plenty of food, have a sleeping bag in your car in case you break down. I know people are probably going to be traveling carrying sleeping bags with them. That's a story I'll tell here in a little bit. Make sure your car is checked before you head out on these roads or at least go on a trip. It's really important where you're inside Death Valley. There is only, surprisingly, and I tried confirming this again, but I couldn't get a confirmation, but back in the day, what was called the West Side Road. The first part we talked about coming in to Badwater from Shoshone is basically the East Side Road. There is a dirt version on the west side of Death Valley called the West Side Road.
Okay.
It was the only road in California that was dirt that AAA serviced.
Huh.
And I know that from personal experience.
Uh-oh.
So I was in a little place, canyon, called Hungry Bill's. We'd gone up to Hungry Bill's Ranch, and my alternator gave out in my SUV. I got towed up to the top of the hill by another kind visitor, and I coasted all the way down to the West Side Road. AAA came out, picked me up, took me into Furnace Creek to the, what was the Chevron station at the time, where they spent the next – they had to go for parts and fix it up the next day. Funny story on that is this was, again, a President's Day weekend. We like to camp down a place called Shoshone to the south end. There is an RV campground there, and at the back of the RV campground is a grass area where they let people with tents camp for a very small fee. And you walk across a little city street, and they had their thermal swimming pool. So it was always a great place. We loved to station there if we weren't staying in a friend's house. Well, this year we were not staying in a friend's house. Everything was full. Furnace Creek, whatever. None of my Park Service friends, they all had company. There was no room at the end. We ended up sleeping.
You know, many of us have to visit a national park without a Park Service friend to stay sleep on the couch.
But yeah, but you've got friends all over the place that you probably get to stay with. So, but we ended up sleeping at the bottom of the fire suppression tank.
Okay.
For the housing area, i.e. drained swimming pool.
Okay.
It was the worst night of our life. The wind was just howling and blowing, but that was the only place. And because I carried my sleeping bags in the back end of my car, I had them, but we still had the tent set up down at the Shoshone thing. So just breaking down, it does happen to even the most experienced people.
Well, you mentioned safety things. So we're carrying water, we're carrying a sleeping bag, the car has been serviced. Are there other things that we ought to mention as long as we're doing that?
Well, food. You should always have plenty of food. There is no general cell service in Death Valley. I think if you're lucky, you should get it at Furnace Creek without a problem, particularly the visitor center. Mm-hmm. I was told that was the only place, but I was surprised to find out that up at Stovepipe Wells, I did have a couple bars on my phone, and I have
on
AT&T.
Your phone, to be
right.
Specific.
Yeah, a couple bars, yeah. So, but other than that, you're not going to, and I don't want to say I didn't have a few other places in my travels where I didn't get at least one bar I could send out a text if I needed to. I have experienced that a little bit, but no cell service.
I don't remember who I was talking to recently who had the impression that you must be able to go all over California and get cell service. I just had to laugh. There are many, many places that we can't. It's a decent-sized state. And there's some great, big, wide-open places.
Yeah. While we're on kind of lodging, I'll just mention that, of course, campgrounds are basically the same. There's a campground at Furnace Creek. Mm-hmm. There is a campground at Mesquite Springs, which is up by Scotty's Castle, and I've camped there. It's a good place, good campground. There's one up at Wild Rose, and those are the ones that, Wild Rose isn't open all year round, but at least Furnace Creek and Mesquite are. And there's six others that they have, too, throughout the place that may or may not be open seasonally, so just check on what time of year that you're going to and where they're located. Now, one of the things, too, is they have at Furnace Creek is Farabee's Jeep Rentals and Tours. Now, I can't talk to you about the tours, but I did rent from Farabee's Jeep to go up to one of the places called Saline Valley because I really didn't want to take my four-wheel drive on that road. So if you don't have four-wheel drive and you want to experience this some places, there is an option. You can rent them. I don't remember what the costs are as far as that is concerned. But one of the other things, too, is please, please, please always tell someone where you're going and when you're going to get out and what route you're going to take. And do not change your route unless you absolutely have to. And that was kind of what I was talking about when I went out the north side road to Yucca Sand Dunes. I was going up and over one pass. I had one bar so I could text my wife and say, hey, this is where I'm at. I've made it this far. So I usually have someone that we called it flight following. It was a term we used when we were working, when we were up in helicopters and planes and stuff like that. The dispatch center would keep an eye on us every so often. And so we still use it at the house here. Yeah, honey, doing flight following. So I'll text her as I'm getting to certain different places. So if anything happens to me, at least they know I've gotten that far. keep that in mind on doing that. So let's talk about some of these backcountry areas. They're scattered throughout the park, so I'll try to kind of go from east to west. We talked about Salt Creek, and if you take that road towards Death Valley, doing the east arm of this stick figure, there is Keen Wonder Mine. It is one of probably the most productive and richest gold mines that there was in Death Valley, and there are ruins there that you can look at. The one that I got a kick out of is Chloride Cliff, and let me tell you, this is serious four-wheel drive, folks. I ended up taking the superintendent up there in my pickup truck that one President's Day weekend, and I was like, oh, please don't break down, please don't break down. I don't want to break down with the park superintendent in my car. Please don't break down. It is unique. There's not a lot there, but you do have some great views from up on Chloride Cliff or Chloride City, as far as I think it was established about 1871 as a gold mining town.
Well, and I see that is located, and we haven't mentioned the name of these mountains. You're in the Funeral Mountains.
I don't want to scare everybody.
Just to keep with our theme here.
Yeah, the Funeral Mountains. And as we were talking about, this east arm is paved. So if you continue, if you don't do any of those, and you continue out towards Beatty, Nevada, this is a paved road. And there's actually a neat ghost town outside, which I'm sure people probably have seen pictures of if they look at the desert, called Rhyolite. And it's on BLM, as we mentioned earlier, Bureau of Land Management. It's paved to get to the ghost town, and there's a lot of structures there worth visiting and walking around that old historic town. And I think that town was created about 1904. Now, you can make a loop here and come back into Death Valley via what's called Titus Canyon Road. This is a one-way Jeep trail. Basically going down through a canyon with all the different rock formations, and you'll pass by another mining ghost town called Leadfield with a few ruins, and you'll come back out on the Scotty's Castle Road, and that can go whichever way you want to go on that. That's the east side. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Yubi-Hebi Crater, say that fast, going out the north side. This is the trip I did on just this last April. It's about 70-some-odd miles from there to the town of Big Pine on 395 Highway. Okay. Most of it, except for about 20-some-odd miles, is dirt, and it was the worst washboard road I'd ever seen. It was fine as far as traversing, but you just had to take care. You didn't want everything falling off underneath you by going too fast on this. Mm-hmm. And what's kind of cool there, that takes you up to, going out the north end, what's called Eureka Sand Dunes, which is a national natural landmark. It's basically, and there's several sand dunes, but this is the highest one there, Eureka. It's basically eroded canyons, the sedimentary rocks blowing sand, they get trapped in this kind of little bowl that's there. And it's nice. There's a campground there also, if you wanted a backcountry camp. That'll get you out the north side.
And you say backcountry camp, I'm picturing I'm bringing out everything I bring in.
Correct.
And limited facilities.
Yeah. They do have a couple outhouses and some picnic tables, and that's it.
Okay.
Well. And they're right at the base of the sand dunes. And when I was out there, people were sliding down on them on plastic bags and things like that. They're pretty. I'm glad I've always wanted to go there. It's a long drive getting out that way. If we had stayed at Yubi-Hebi, and what I did when I first visited Yubi, I continued on what's called Racetrack Road, which is going west from Yubi-Hebi, turns into a Jeep road. And that takes you out to the infamous racetrack.
Okay.
Which is where the rocks are that people see, that it's on a playa, and they see these tracks where these rocks have skidded along. And these are going to be, I think the latest thing is that strong winds are blowing after a light rain, so it's a little bit of slickness there, and the strong winds pushes the rocks around. I think that's the latest scientific theory on it. It's interesting to go out and see these things with these little tracks snaking across this playa, and there's just that one rock that's there. These northern Jeep trails have some interesting place names I just want to throw out there. You have junctions of road. There's Tea Kettle Junction, Crankshaft Junction, Bat Rock Junction. Again, there's a teapot at the junction. Up a crankshaft, there's a whole bunch of crankshafts just sitting there on poles. Some cuteness to Death Valley. Now, heading to the west side, we talked about going up the Wild Rose. There's an old gold mining town and mill site called Skidoo, which is built about 1906. Again, talking about four-wheel drive roads, and there's remains of that still out there. The really big one, and the one that I used the Ferrobee Jeep Trails for, is going out to Saline Valley, which is the northwesternmost boundary of the park. There are some dunes out there, but the people go out there mainly for the warm springs. And it's a bit of a drive getting out there. I think it's like something like 40 some odd miles, if I remember, to get out there by this bumpy Jeep trail. It's really more of a Jeep trail, although not serious Jeeping. But you have people out there natural sunbathing in the thermal waters. And there's actually an old airstrip called the Chicken Strip, which was closed down for a number of years, but the Park Service went ahead and authorized it as an airport. So you can fly in and camp, so to speak. Coming down then from Panamint Springs, if you were to take the road which leads out of the park there, heading south towards the town of Ridgecrest and 395, there's a couple features on that west side that are backcountry-ish. One is just outside the park called Ballarat. Again, it's a ghost town on BLM land. Several structures still standing there. But if you take the left fork there, you'll head up to the end of the road at Surprise Canyon. And Surprise Canyon Creek is a National Wild and Scenic River. And that's about a 5 mile or more hike up to an old ghost town called Panamint City. And this is another piece of the park I have actually not gotten into. I understand it for those that are hiking, this is a great hike, although there are some big boulders you got to scramble around. If you'd taken the right fork, you would have gone down to another unique place in Death Valley called Barker Ranch. It was an old desert retreat. Now, unfortunately, it was destroyed in 2009 by fire, but I'm bringing it up because this is where National Park Service Ranger Richard Powell arrested Charlie Manson in 1969 for burning an NPS tractor, not realizing that they had committed and were being sought for the murders down in Los Angeles. Death Valley is a unique place. Lots of characters.
You mentioned characters there that would be high on my list of characters I don't want to meet anywhere. So
yeah, that's one I wouldn't want to meet either. So anyway, last real big thing before we just get into some general tourism stuff. I'm sure people have, one of the other reasons for Death Valley is fans of Star Wars. Episode 4 and 6 were filmed in places like Dante's View, Artist's Palette, and the Mesquite Flat Sand Dunes. The Death Valley website or at the visitor center has a flyer on visiting sites where some of those were filmed. So I wanted to bring that to folks' attention.
Excellent.
Now, just in general, we were talking about times of the year. I did want to mention sometimes the spring is great for wildflower season.
I was going to ask, are there particular places you would go? No, not this year. Particular places you would go that you're going to have the best chance of seeing a bloom or even more lucky, a super bloom?
Not really. You just have to listen to what's going on. Let me tell you, it starts in Anza Borrego and works its way north up the elevation to Joshua Tree, Mojave, and Death Valley, kind of. Although Death Valley, because it has all the elevations there, may have its own. And it is. You can actually see. I've seen it just progress. All of a sudden, flowers are blooming 5 more miles up the road, and then 5 more miles up the road a couple days later and stuff. So just listen to what the park news and the press is talking about. If there's a super bloom, believe me, you're going to hear about it. And I, for one, don't think I want to be there for that. It's just the tourists, the traffic and everything. Oh, my gosh.
And what time of year are we doing? How early in the year is that likely to happen?
If it's super happen blooms are probably for Death Valley going to be late March, April.
Okay.
Maybe even into May.
Hmm.
And one other thing, the sticker shock I was going to say, watch with gas prices the way they are. When I was at Furnace Creek on April 1st, it was almost $9 a gallon there. I'm warning people. Gassed up in Shoshone, and I also gassed up at Stovepipe Wells just to make sure, because I always want to have a full tank of gas. So one of the things people may not think about is, particularly if you're camping or even staying at the lodges, if you can get away or drive down the road a little bit, look up. The stars there. Stargazing in Death Valley is great. A little bit of wildlife stuff. You'll probably see coyotes, roadrunners, maybe not see a rattlesnake. They're out there. Lizards. If you're lucky, you might see bighorn sheep. And they have, I thought, relocated all the burrows, the wild burrows out of the park. But I just saw an NPS press release that they're working on some more burrow captures to get them out of the park. So I guess there's still a few wandering around. And these may or may not have been left over from the old miner days. I'm not sure.
Feral rather than wild.
I think so. So with that, I just want to quickly mention some of the towns outside the park. And again, let's start out at Shoshone. Just give people an idea what's there. Shoshone's just, it's a great little town. Like I said, we camp there. Love camping there. Just south of it a little bit is called Tecopa Hot Springs. Again, there's thermal springs there. places that you can stay there. A neat place is actually, this is on the old Spanish Trail National Historic Trail.
Okay, and that's the one that connects Santa Fe with Los Angeles?
To Los Angeles, right. And okay. This is the one that I think the 49ers are supposed to be on, but don't quote me on that one.
Okay.
A great place to see there is the China Ranch Date Farm. They're a date farm. And you can go have, I think you can still get date shakes there. If you've never had a date shake, try it. They're delicious. Also here is the Amargosa National Wild and Scenic River flows through here. And again, it's a river in the desert. You can only actually see it flowing in certain spots. So it's pretty neat. Coming up to Shoshone, if you're coming in off the 40 from the Los Angeles area, you got to stop in Baker and see the world's tallest thermometer.
Okay.
And there's also alien beef jerky there.
I was going to I was surprised you didn't say alien beef jerky, but just so people know, alien beef jerky, which you'll see, you won't have any trouble finding it because you'll see ads for it for miles coming up to it. But it's all sorts of jerky, not just from beef jerky or turkey jerky, but ostrich jerky or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not far from the world's tallest thermometer, so.
That's not. Just kind of across the street. So at Shoshone, if you'd come in through the east leg at Death Valley Junction, there's a place there called the Amargosa Opera House. This okay. is an inn and an opera house that was acquired by Marta Beckett back in 67. She was basically the lone performer that gave plays, operas there at this. And she painted the inside. I would recommend stopping and getting a tour of the opera house and the walls that she painted and things like that. I never saw one of her performances, but I did get to meet her once in her later years. Quite an interesting story of a lady and what she did for the latter part of her life. We already mentioned Beatty, which would be the town on the east side in Nevada, if you're halfway mm-hmm. up. And then, of course, we talked about going over to 395 and the next town being Lone Pine. And I'll make a quick comment about Lone Pine being the Alabama Hills. I don't know if it's been mentioned on any of your other podcasts.
Yeah, we did a whole episode about the east side of the Sierra, and including Manzanar, which you mentioned earlier, the Japanese relocation camp not far from Lone Pine. And we talked about the Alabama Hills, but it's worth mentioning again because that was 15 years ago, I would guess.
Yeah, well, it's a great stop. A lot of people stop there. But the Alabama Hills, and get into them, again, another BLM area, is by four-wheel drive road, but I think it's graded in a lot of spots. This is where a lot of the Western movies we're talking the Westerns
Western
back in the 30s and the 40s. And, of course, they're still filming there. I can't remember the latest film. There is a film museum there that you can stop at, which is pretty extensive. That'll give you all the history of the films. And you can actually get a little guide and go out there. And they'll have places to stop. And you look at your little guide that you just bought. And there's a picture of the movie out of a John Wayne film from the 30s. You'll see the stagecoach going across the field in that frame. And you look up and, there's the hillside. There's the skyline that's in that photo. It's a fun place to do.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, Jeff, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Death Valley.
Artist Palette.
Where are you standing? What, Artist Palette. Yep. Okay.
With all the colors.
I'm with you. Gelatin. Okay.
All right.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Death Valley.
Well, this is going back to Badwater. And I think it was in 2004. I'm not quite sure of the date. I was trying to come back on this. But here you are at the lowest point in North America. Mm-hmm. And in 2004, they had the incident was after an intense monsoon. They had something like 6 inches of rain in 7 months. And Badwater turned into a lake. And I remember seeing a picture of the park superintendent, who was, I can't even remember who it was at the time, out there kayaking at the lowest point in North America.
Well, and the reason I'm reacting this way is anybody who has been there has probably had got the same reaction. It's a significant site because it is the lowest site, but I mean, it's just flat salt. Normally, it is a relatively featureless plain, and so turning into a lake would be very cool to see.
Well, when you have all the water coming down out of your Funeral Mountains, and, you know, on the east side, and for the life of me, I can't. It's Panamints on the west side. I mean, it's a valley. Every place you come into it, you're going to be dropping down from a higher elevation.
Yeah.
I think there is one exit, though. That's out of the Saratoga. I think the south end out of Saratoga Springs, I think. Yeah, the Amargosa River goes out the south end.
Interesting. Well, Jeff, if I asked you to summarize Death Valley in just three words, what three words are you going to pick?
This is not going to be original. Hottest. driest, lowest.
Okay.
And that appears to be a slogan that the Death Valley National Park is now using on most of their publications.
That but seems like a pretty good slogan. Excellent. Well, Jeff doesn't yet have a travel blog because I haven't been able to talk him into it yet, or even writing for Amateur Traveler, but I'm working on him. But Jeff, thanks so much for coming back on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for yet another national park, Death Valley.
Thanks, Chris, for having me.
My thanks, as always, to the patrons of the show who help support the show financially. You can become a patron of Amateur Traveler by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. You get the show a little earlier, and you get an ad-free version of the show, as well as a monthly Zoom call and tchotchkes, depending on which level you sign up for. I had some feedback recently from Amy, who said, "I'm a fan of Amateur Traveler. I just heard you read the listener's criticism at the end of the Hill Country show. Okay, I totally disagree. Your commentary helps fill in the blanks for listeners. Some of your guests are not as clear as they should be. You fill in history, details, and important context. Thank you for the show. Do you have an email newsletter? Count me in," Amy says. And yes, if you go to Amateur Traveler on any of the posts and go to the right-hand column, you can sign up for the Amateur Traveler newsletter, which I try and get out monthly. It's a tri-monthly, as it were, but that's tri with a Y. I also had some recent reviews. California Expert said, "Favorite travel podcast. Always look forward to new episodes of this show. Chris has a great format that works. He lets the guest tell the story, but always asks important questions and contributes to the conversation in thoughtful ways. Great mix of unusual destinations and familiar ones. Guests are always knowledgeable and informative. I've noticed a certain luxury travel podcast has stolen some of his format. I had to unfollow her because it bugged me so much. LOL." I should say, California Expert, that don't worry too much about somebody stealing my format. I think I stole some of the format of the show originally from Adam Christensen from the MacCast, and I definitely know with This Week in Travel, we stole some of the format that for that show from This Week in Tech. We had it stolen from us from other people. I don't think that's really stealing. I think that's just recognizing a format may work for your show as well. So I would say go ahead and listen to that travel podcaster if you like the show, and don't worry too much about where they got their format ideas from. And I don't know who you're talking about, so I'd be curious to know. Die Book Reader said, "Great podcast. Never miss an episode. Travel inspiration in each episode. Thanks so much." And Sarita7981 said, "Good show. Could you consider doing an updated episode about Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, or PI? Our family is planning a trip this summer, and the last episodes about those places have been several years. Thank you." So yeah, if you are someone who knows a lot about Newfoundland, Nova Scotia, or Prince Edward Island, do let me know, because I'll take a look at how long it's been. I know Newfoundland, I've been looking for a guest on that destination in particular. I am open to new episodes on those destinations, but I have to find someone who knows them well and can do a good job with that. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.